We're going to spend some time now talking about a topic that may or may not be on your radar, but probably ought to be. And a big part of that has to do with SB 20. And joining us in studio for some information on this topic is County Supervisor Ryan Gregory. Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning, Barry.
Let's start with the very, very basic thing of what is SB 20? What will it do?
Well, to tell you what SB 20 is, let's first start with Skyline Park. Almost 50 years ago, the county leased this land from the state. This is all part of the state hospital property. We leased it for park and built a park years ago. And so we currently lease it from the state, $100 a year. It expires in 2030. It's important we own it because we don't know what the state might do in 2030 with whatever pressures are on the state at that time. And two, what we've learned is all the little things we want to do with the park to improve the park are very difficult because we've got to go through this major, long bureaucratic process just to make minor improvements and changes at the park. So we should own it. It's a county park. It's for us. We tried it in 2012, tried it in 2015, and negotiations failed. This is our third attempt to buy the park. SB 20 simply allows us to negotiate to buy the park, simply put. Now, there's this other thing happening. The governor announced months ago that his initiative to convert some, to look at converting some of the state surplus land into housing. We all applauded him for that because they're being part of the solution, not just telling counties and cities, you must do it, right? He's saying, I'm going to help you. We were excited about that. And very recently, he came out with his list of two properties in Napa, the Vets Home, which we've been working hard on. Yay. And the second one is 20 acres of the Skyline Park property that we've been trying so hard to buy for park. And so we've been sort of tactfully saying we don't agree this is vacant and unused land. This is very important to the park. It's staging for events. It's a huge part of the equestrian program at the park. We just don't agree that this is surplus, meaning vacant and unused. It's very, very used and very not vacant. So over the last few months, we've been hinting that it should be down, sort of down Imola along the corridor. The advantages are, think of some from Highway 121 in towards, let's say, Shetler, a strip. Advantages are you're opposite the other community. You're going to bring that community up. You're going to finish Imola. Right now, it's a half a street, and it's falling apart. Utility mains are right in Imola right there. Just right there, you pop into them. Where it's proposed currently is outside, way out, way down at the end. Utilities would have to be extended to it. It's just there's all these red flags that says this might not be the best place. So we've been tactfully hinting at that. We've got the state's our partner. We need them to sell us the park. We need them for everything else. So we're working with our legislators, Cecilia Aguirre-Curry and Bill Dodd, and trying to get them to see it the way we see it locally. And there's a lot of process left here on this issue, and we're sure there'll be plenty of time to have discussions with folks and try to make sure the housing goes in the right place. Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about the strip that you referred to, that's state hospital property.
That's state hospital property.
Right.
But if you've ever been through there, it's vacant buildings and vacant space. I've never seen a human in with the times I go through there. Mm-hmm. So it's when you look at surplus, vacant, unused, that screams vacant and unused.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of people, when this has come up, anything about the park has come up and housing, immediately turn to that and say, wait a minute, what about the state hospital? There's a huge amount of what appears to be underutilized land.
It was always state hospital. It's like, great, that's great. And then all of us were caught off guard when it was something else.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're negotiating that layer at the same time of SB 20 was signed, so we now have the ability to go negotiate. So at this point, we're navigating that new layer as we go to try to buy the park. And remember, we don't own it. So I've, one of these things I've gotten, whether it's phone calls or social media, is how could you, the county, sell part of the park for housing, right?
Mm.
Okay, well, we don't own it.
We don't own it.
And the state can sell us whatever they want. If they choose, now at the end of the day, if they choose to hold back 20 acres and only sell us 830 acres, that's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to work really hard to prevent that. We want to buy the whole park because it's important. But they'll sell us only what they're going to sell us at the end of the day.
Yeah. And they would have the right to take that 20 acres, surplus it, sell it to anyone?
You know, it's interesting. This is new ground, so it's outside of the city limit. Mm-hmm. It needs municipal services. Would it go through LAFCO? Mm-hmm. Would it have to be annexed? Mm-hmm. Would it be a vote of the people, like any annexation like that outside of the rural urban limit line? I don't know. But it's the state. they're a higher authority, and, mm-hmm. and maybe there's ways around this stuff. I just don't know. There's so many questions about how that might develop. Now, remember, these questions apply also if it went on the state hospital down the way, right? So these questions aren't really isolated to maybe a bad choice on where. Those will be relevant to whatever mm-hmm. happens.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned working with Assemblymember Aguiar Curry and Senator Dodd on this. Where are they on the whole issue?
They understand. Of course, they're local, especially Bill Dodd. You know, he's from here. Cecilia feels like she's from here. You know, right? She's really embraced our community since being elected to the assembly. They get it, but they're dealing with the DGS and DSH and these big organizations, and just this governor. The governor, to his credit, is really, really focused on housing and being part of the solution. And so we can't fault him for that, but we can fault him for choosing the wrong site. And we'll just do our darndest to get him to realize that.
Yeah. On the face of it, it doesn't seem like an intractable problem to me.
No, so much process left, so much opportunity to have that conversation.
Yeah. What are the county's long-term goals for the Skyline Park property? Let's say you are able to complete a purchase of the entire property. What do you intend to do with it in the future?
Oh, just improve it. It's a wonderful place. I'm there a lot. I'm what you call a heavy user. There's opportunities, and let's say at some point the Open Space District owns it and they actually have some revenue to work with. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of deferred maintenance on the trails, so a lot of work needed on the trails. I've been going there for almost 30 years, and I've seen how the trails have deteriorated, and these are trails that haven't had any love for 30 years. So it's deferred maintenance, and then there's opportunities for new trails out there, and enhancement of the disc golf area, and just improvements, making it better.
In other words, continued operations as a park.
We have to. So here's what, and this is important too. SB 20 says we're only allowed to buy the park for park. We can't do anything else with it, so we can't buy it and flip it. Now, if we buy it and ever wanted to sell off a piece of it, it would have to go with a covenant that says it would have to be park.
Okay.
So we'd have to sell it to somebody that wants to own a park, right? So SB 20 has put those protections in there that we can't buy it and flip it, so it's always going to be a park.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subject to the state's whims, as always.
As always.
Yeah. You mentioned the Veterans Home as another possible site for some housing. What's in the thinking process there? What are we talking about?
Well, I'm not exactly sure where they're on the property. I know Mayor Dunbar, to his credit, has been working really hard on this long before the governor announced his initiative to surplus state land for housing. He's been talking about this, and I think because of that, he has got on the list. There's a very the state started with this big old list of all the state property. I mean, this is state of California, so it's everywhere, and whittled it down to a shorter list, and it ended up on there, I think, because of Mayor Dunbar's efforts and their council. So somewhere on there, housing, I don't know how many units, but the beauty of that, it's in the city of, the town of Yountville. It's already in it. It's planned to be part of the town of Yountville and be served by the town of Yountville, so it's a little bit different than what we're talking about in Napa. So it's a great deal. I think... from what I've heard, they're long, but now short list of properties they're looking at. I think there's some that'll rise to the top, and I do think the Vets Home will because of those factors, and it may be that Skyline, just because it's so difficult with you know utility extensions, etc., might just fall down, and who knows? So, mm-hmm. and this, if you've been around government, especially at the state, it doesn't go fast. And again, we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about it.
The housing crisis may be over before any of these things happen.
Right, yeah, right.
Right?
Right, we might solve that one.
Yeah. In terms of, while we're on the housing issue, what else is happening behind the scenes? I don't mean to make light of the crisis that we're having, because it's very real in terms of cost for people, and it's driving people out, and it's impacting business, and everything's, is harmed by it. What other areas is the county working on in that regard?
The biggest thing on housing we're working on, and it's all the things you've heard us talk about that we continue to work on, workforce proximity housing, impact fees, applying them to new projects. We've been doing really well with what limited resources we have. But the biggest effort coming forward for housing is getting ready for our next housing elements. Housing cycles come in 8 years, and cycles of 8 years. Our RENA numbers are coming next year sometime. We heard middle of next year we'll get the number. Now, the RENA, Regional Housing Needs Assessment, that's the number we all get that says you must zone for this. And by the way, newer legislation coming around is starting to consider penalties.
Yeah.
You used to be able to zone for it, check the box, oh, great, we zoned for it, and that's it. Now there's potentially penalties if you're not actually permitting them. So, I mean, the game's changing right now. And so our housing elements all are due, all six. So all the five cities, the four cities, the town, and the county, they all do it at the end of 2022. What we're working on right now is setting up what's called a subregion. So for the first time, there's some work left to do, but most of the cities have agreed that this is a good idea. So we set up a subregion. That means that state hands Napa County one number, and the county, the four cities, and the town sit down at a table and figure out where does it best go.
Is there a precedent for that?
There's precedent for that. Other communities have done it. We actually did it last cycle, set it all up, but it turns out we didn't need to do it because our numbers were so low. So at the end of the day, we didn't really use the tool, but we set it up last time. But this will be the first time we set it up and use it, because the worry is that the numbers are going to be so high and surprise all of us. And the best shot we have at it is to work together. Particularly the county, we don't do housing. We're always looking for our city partners to take it and figure out how we can share the credit. So that'll continue, but this will be at a new level. And, housing knows no boundaries. The way I look at it is, if there's limited money and there's a site over here that's shovel ready, can support a couple hundred units in the right place, and there's a way for, all of us to benefit and get credit from it, why not? Right? Why not? Housing in our community is housing in our community, wherever it is. It's, everything's close enough here. Wherever it goes, it's going to be helpful. So that's a pretty big effort, kind of a different paradigm, and I think it'll pay off.
And everything that we're seeing that's happening now, the Gasser project here, our neighbors with the big apartment development, 400 plus units, Napa Pipe. Those are already factored in. Those are already allocations that are counted, right? They're not future allocations. When these new numbers come in, they won't have any bearing on that.
Yeah, no, anything permitted right now, you can't take credit for next time. So it's got to be, potential.
Yeah.
It's got to be potential.
There's been talk for a long time about some very, specific properties within the cities that are developable. The uses that are on them now could be somewhere else. One that I'm thinking of is the Corp Yard. We've seen that, every year people have talked about that, the city of Napa's Corp Yard.
Yeah. I coming into elected office, I'm new. I could still say that, right? So, can I? So I said, that's what we're going to do. Well, I'm going to get that done. What Napa Sand, Caltrans, county, city, we all have these Corp Yards around. Let's just do one big one. We'll share it.
Corp Yard.
Easy, right? I mean, that's simple. Let's just
slam dunk.
Do that.
Why have you not gotten that done yet, Supervisor Gregory?
Because I'm new. I'm still new. But it's hard. Yeah, what I've found is the jurisdictional boundaries are not just a boundary. It's a mindset. It's like, this is ours. We don't trust you. Don't touch ours. This is ours. And so sharing across jurisdictions is harder than I thought it would be. And again, in some ways, it's better than it's ever been, like the county's relationship with the city. Bridging that gap, coming together has never been better. So, it's just a thing.
Yeah.
It's just a thing you get over.
I think my point in bringing that up was that if the RENA numbers are as big as people are concerned they will be, the pressure on those ideas like the consolidated courtyard and other things is going to increase tremendously.
Uh-huh.
And it will force decision makers into that position.
Look what happened last cycle. Our initial estimate of our RENA mandate was 1,000 units in the county, just the county, and negotiated down to 180. And that's our current housing element based on 180 units of varying affordability levels. Imagine if it's back at 1,000 this time. Mm-hmm. And that's the warning we've been given is, you know, get ready. All the factors of growth in the state. I'd say that the thing that's changed too is there's still respect for wine country and still respect for our ag preserve, but there's less patience for your special argument. Like, you don't have to participate in the Bay Area's government because of the Bay Area's growth because of your ag preserve. That's sort of wrapping up, and now it's you're gonna participate, and then the fires, the major losses, and we need the gains. So for all these reasons, we're being warned that get ready.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get ready.
That's a middle of next year, you say, when those numbers are come out.
Yeah. Yeah. So anybody you talk to, it's sometime next year. But the best estimates I've heard of have been middle-ish.
Since you mentioned the fires, we're rapidly approaching 2-year anniversary of that horrendous fire we experienced here. And obviously we're concerned going into September, October, and the time when those fires can certainly flare up. And the question of preparedness, I know the county's taken many steps since October 17. How do you feel we are going into the heart of the fire season now?
Yeah, it's a great question. We did this presentation at Impact Napa recently, North Bay Business Conference, and it was sort of entitled Why I Sleep Better at Night Now than Before. The things you've heard about, but just as a reminder, our notification system, we relied on Nixle prior to the 2 years ago, the last fires. Unfortunately, only about 17,000 people were subscribed to Nixle. It's a subscription service. Happens that after the fire, 174,000 or something were subscribed. I think, you know, more than even the population of Napa. So now it's a great tool, but because we don't want to rely on that, we've subscribed to IPAWS, which is essentially we can force a message to you whether you like it or not, whether it's your phone. We can actually, like the Amber Alert screen, you know, scroll it across your TV, but it has to be during an emergency. A major emergency, and then because the federal program, it doesn't translate. So we'll still use Nixle to back it up. So things like that, we've ordered and installed a couple new Firewatch cameras, which are operated by the Cal Fire Center in St. Helena, which is actually the center for 6 counties that our Cal Fire looks after. It's amazing. If you haven't been in there, I tell you, it'll make you feel better because there it's like a war room. There's screens all over the place. Look, you know, watching these cameras, and what these cameras do is tell you, you know, immediately that there's smoke, and it triangulates its position and tells the guys where to go right away. It's amazing, and there's a bunch more cameras on the way. Outfitted our deputies' vehicles with a high-low siren, you know, think like European. Jason Bourne movies or like Beto Minion, right? Beto Minion. It's this high-low siren that is different. And the thing is, when it rolls through, like we tested it through the Mount Veeder area, and they just crank this thing up where you're not going to miss it. And it just says, something's happening. You know, exactly. Tune into the radio.
It harkens back to when they would ring the church bells when there was something going wrong.
Yep.
Everybody pay attention. Something's wrong.
We improved our vegetation management policies, trying to make that easier, better understand for people. And then the biggest thing is the public safety power shutdowns that PG&E is doing. It's the biggest thing. The biggest mitigation, but also the biggest headache if your power goes out for 3 days. At home, fine, just go do something else. But imagine if you're a grocery store.
Yeah,
it hurts.
I hear the generator business is thriving.
I bet it is.
Actually, I had a conversation with somebody who does that, among other things, and when I asked about it, his eyes just got really wide, like, you know, we can't even begin to keep up.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of work in northern Napa County, Lake County, and just, like, they can't possibly manage the demand for generators right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting. When this first came up, we were demanding it. We were saying, PG&E, you've got to do this. And now they're doing it. And we're...
Hey, wait a minute.
Whoa. Now, but when it first came up, I thought, now this is just one more thing if you're a rural property that you deal with. You deal with septic systems. Mm-hmm. You deal with, you know, tree and a lot of property work. You just deal with things as a rural property owner. And I thought, well, this is just one more thing. But turns out, because of where these transmission mains are, if they close it off, like the one that goes up from Solano over to us, if they close that one down, it could be big parts of the city of Napa, mm-hmm. where we live, right down in the city. I didn't expect that, right? that it would, but it's just the way it's worked out. It's like if they do a PSPS, it might shut you down right there in the middle of the city of Napa, mm-hmm. and it's just so nobody's free from this. You could be affected. So just tune in. And yeah. PG&E's been pretty good about forecasting and informing. So I would suggest if anybody hasn't yet, go to your PG&E account, make sure they have your cell phone, because they're contacting you right. when this is coming.
Yeah. Very good information. Supervisor Ryan Gregory is with us. We have some more time coming up after a break, and I want to get into the whole winery compliance topic and see where we're at after what's it been, a year or more since that whole process began?
Close to it.
Stay tuned. That's coming up next, and much more in the final hour of today's Wine Country Live right here on KVON. And we're talking in this segment with Supervisor Ryan Gregory, who joined us here in studio. In the previous segment, we talked about SB 20 involving Skyline Park, and we talked a little bit about emergency preparedness for fire season. Next up, let's talk about this winery compliance topic. And if I may, I'll take just a moment here to read the introductory paragraph from the Dickinson, Peatman, and Fogarty blog that got me thinking about this and interested in talking with you about it. Here's what it says. The Napa County Board of Supervisors has undertaken a series of major regulatory moves involving winery and vineyard permitting over the course of the past year. Critics of the various regulatory changes abound on all sides of the issues, with the board navigating a difficult path between wine industry, agricultural, environmental, and anti-growth interests. Ouch, that doesn't sound like much fun.
Well, you covered it, Barry. Yeah. What else do you want to talk about?
So I guess as this goes on to point out, and again, this is from a blog that the DP&F, or Dickinson, Peatman, and Fogarty law firm maintains. They do, obviously, for people locally who know this, a lot of winery law work, and compliance is part of the law, and permitting is part of law, so they're involved in a lot of issues for decades around wineries and vineyards. Mm-hmm. So they've identified the status. I guess the question right now we have to go back to is the county getting from this what you hope to get?
I think we are. It's still new. It's still being really tested, even though it's been around for a while. We're still working through the almost 50 compliance applications we got from this, and learning from that. I think we'll get to that here in a minute with the learning, what the learning has led us to also. But when you agree, in the challenge here, we have these tiers of use permits, and it's been the biggest challenge how we process these. There's the pre-WDO use permits, which weren't really specific about what you can and can't do. And then there was the post-WDO and more modern approvals where the use permit is very black and white. It says you can do this, you can't do that. So the older ones are a challenge because you've got to go through this status determination of, okay, what is it that you were permitted to do back then? So it's a lot more work with those. The newer ones are just easy. You have so many visitors, 10 visitors a day, and you're having more, so you've got to deal with that. So the tiers of use permits we have made this even more challenging. But the point is that, you know, when you agree to use permit, you agree to the rules, and you should follow the rules. And we just learned that, you know, some folks weren't. And this is an effort for the county to compel them to come in willingly and volunteer and bring their use permits up to standard or up to what it is they want to do. Now, this is a discretionary approval. They still have to come forward and ask and get, you know, and they have to, you know, somebody has to say yes, whether it's planning commission or the board. And the newer penalty is if after this, those that didn't make this deadline, those that aren't in the process, if you're found to be in violation of some use permit condition down the road, you just can't write a check anymore. You actually revert to, you have to revert to your use permit conditions and sit there for a year before you can come in and ask for anything new. So it's a way to bifurcate compliance problems with, you know, the growth of a business. And, you know, it's been a respectful process. These are businesses. They're important to us, and we want them to succeed. And so we've been working with them, trying to make this work for everybody. And so what we've learned is there's a reason we've got a lot of these compliance problems, because our regulations are so thick and complicated that they don't facilitate businesses who need to grow at faster than that, right? The best example is in the regulation right now is to add one employee, it kicks you in a major use permit modification category. One employee. Now, Will and Jalissa here at the radio station want to add one employee. If I told them it would cost $100,000 and take about 3 years, would they go through that process, or would they just hire an employee? You know, they would. Who knows? Will and Jalissa are good people. They'd probably go through the process, right? But challenge. Our process doesn't go fast enough. Businesses evolve. You know, you might need an employee tomorrow, not in 3 years. It's the best example, but there's many in there. So,
one to clarify, that one employee addition would be the same whether you only had four employees to begin with, whether you had 40 or 400.
Yeah, it's just a rule that doesn't quite make sense these days. And it's led, so there's all these, you know, regulations in place for a good reason, and this all came around, you know, years ago over the course of history. And they all had a good reason when they came in, but it's a new world. Mm-hmm. Businesses need something different. Mm-hmm. Businesses have changed, not just wineries. Any business out in the county, and we need to be better at facilitating and supporting our. You know, we want them to succeed. They're important to us, and so we're looking at some changes, changing some use permit thresholds, trying to make it. They're still going to have to come in and ask for something, but it'll be in a faster process, whether it's a minor mod or even a zoning administrator action. And the idea is reducing these compliance problems by helping businesses evolve at the pace they need to, and not force them into a terrible decision of doing it anyway.
Yeah. When you talk about the compliance problems in general, are they more focused toward visitation or toward production?
It's a lot of visitation. Yeah, visitation is probably the biggest one, and not so much production. You know, it's so rare to have somebody overproducing. Yeah.
To make up an example, somebody's use permit says they're allowed to have 60 visitors a week at their winery, but they're having 120.
Right.
Or 200 or something. That's the kind of thing we're talking about.
That is the kind of thing we're talking about.
They're having a party or an event they're not permitted to have under the use permit.
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And again, we're not saying they're not automatically going to go from 16 to 120. You know, that's a big jump, especially if it's up a rural road, a narrow road with neighbors.
Right.
That's a jump they may not get. And again, this is discretionary, so they're not granted any of this stuff, but they willingly came in and asked for it.
One of the things I learned over time about government is that we have a general misperception of enforcement of the rules, because perhaps we see police out on the street and they're out there enforcing the rules in a very visible way and very actively, like looking for speeders or looking for red light runners. We kind of think that maybe all the government is like that, and that there are inspectors out there making sure that permits are being followed, when in fact, my experience has been the truth is it's all complaint-driven. Mm-hmm. Mostly people go about their daily business, and there's not enough staff, regardless of the size of government, to be like watching everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, did that person get a plastic bag at the grocery store? Stop, you know. We have to have we have to take part in this and agree to the rules, first of all, and then secondly, if there is a problem, it will be a complaint that leads to a change. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate in this sense? And my perception has been that there have been complaints, particularly in the kind of situations you just described. The new place that's up a rural road has a bigger impact on the residential neighbors, has a bigger impact on traffic management, noise, all these other things. Is that where this has all come from?
Yeah, it is complaint driven. We don't have nearly enough folks to go out and look for all this stuff, nor should we. We've got businesses out there next to neighbors. They're good neighbors. The businesses know the neighbors. They get along. It just works, right? And there's places it doesn't work, and those are the ones we're going to hear about.
Yeah.
But again, we're trying to change the mindset of folks. Know what your use permit says. Number one, that's been the biggest aha. Is like, okay, at this point, we heard a lot over the years is, oh, I didn't know my use permit said that.
Which actually is a fair statement because you're operating multiple years of a business. You may not even remember what you filed for.
Especially if they're a pre-WDO winery.
Right.
You need a lawyer to tell you what you can and can't do, right? So we have patience for that. But also the new standard for me is know what your use permit says. If you're a pre-WDO one, you don't have to submit anything to us. Just hire a lawyer and know what it says for yourself. So one, we don't want to hear that anymore. I didn't know. And then two is that I think businesses will think twice, knowing that if a neighbor complains or something happens and we learn about a compliance problem, and they have to revert to something for a year. I mean that could hurt. So we're just trying to support business, but also set a standard that you agree to the use permit and the rules, follow the rules, and when you do that, everybody's in a better shape and in better health. The industry's in better health, and I think most get that and appreciate that.
So you said about 50 wineries have submitted something. There's over 500 wineries in the county. Mm-hmm. So what does that tell us? Does it mean that that 90% of wineries don't need to submit anything?
I don't know. I don't know if it means that. I don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know. So there's really, there's big question marks all over this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of what the DP&F blog post was indicating, that there's a lot of unanswered questions and confusion fundamentally after a year into this. I guess that brings me back to the question, are we getting out of this what we wanted if we're the county?
Well, again, I feel it's on a good track, and at the end of the day, we will get what we want because, again, it's changing. We're changing the culture, and that takes a little bit of time. And so I mentioned the use permit changes. The other thing this more came out of the watershed discussion earlier this year, but the smaller family farm folks came out in mass around there, and we made a compelling story that it's really difficult to get in the business to get built as a small winery, and we've been batting around the idea of a small winery ordinance for a few years, and we're finally, this is actually bundled with some of the use permit threshold changes I mentioned earlier. We're going to try to make it easier for folks to get in the business. The wine business has become more and more, big business. And all these regulations we just talked about, the cost of building a winery is enormous. And some folks who are making wine right now, whether in a custom crush or somewhere, want their own place. And we're looking at a small winery ordinance to help them do that. And then the third part of this package that's coming forth soon is incentivizing growth South County. And not sure how to do that yet, but my vision is if you're a winery up valley and you want to grow a little bit, whether it's production space or bottling or case storage, whatever, and you do it in South County instead. So rather than building a building up here somewhere that's going to create more traffic and cause more impacts, and you can do it there instead. I'm interested in making that link that you did it there instead, so let's incentivize you putting it there, which might mean, again, lower use permit thresholds for building stuff in the airport park.
Mm-hmm.
That was a part of the Blue Ribbon Committee that was, I actually sat on as a Chamber of Commerce guy what, 10 years ago. It was a recommendation in there that just never got implemented.
Would that mean production-type facilities? Or, I mean, we already have a lot of warehousing for the wine industry in South County.
It could be really anything. Production's challenging there, as we know, because of the sewer and water challenges, particularly the sewer challenges. It's expensive. But whatever part of the winery business that you would have put up Valley that can go there instead. And again, that's being fleshed out right now. We're just not quite sure how best to do that, but it's a great idea.
I guess it's the kind of problem you want to have where there's such a demand for the thing you make that everybody wants to do it and everybody wants to consume it, right? It's a good problem in that sense. And yet for the people who feel like their quality of life is impacted by cars and traffic and sound to some degree, people having fun. There's too many people having fun.
Well, look around the Bay Area. There's county, we're in good financial health. We've got strong budgets at a time where other counties are struggling. Other counties are running sales tax measures to run government. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're in great shape here. And I would say while having an ag preserve and all this open space. Without that, I think to achieve the same sort of solvency, what we have right now, you're looking at something entirely different. You've heard about the Santa Clara Valley thing, and that's overused, but I'll just say it again, that's the alternative is, okay, if we don't have wine grapes and vineyards, which then need wineries to make turn the grape into wine, and then they just happen to need visitation now. It's just how the business has changed with direct to consumer and the lack of distributors. It's just sort of what happened, but it's still, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And sure, we have a lot of challenges, traffic challenges that we need to work on, but it could be worse.
Yeah.
And we live in a beautiful place with open space. So I'll take this over that,
right,
and let's get to work on the real problems.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's wineries. It's I think years of not really doing the stuff we've got to do on our roadways. So we're looking at potentially a new impact fee on development. County hadn't had one. I was really surprised because I've done a lot of work in the cities, particularly the city of Napa before, and they have an impact fee. So when you build something, you pay a fee and it goes in this pot, and they use that pot for all these little projects around town they want to do, and we don't have that. And so the county's working on looking at putting that in place where we'll have a little bit of money to do little things. Like Skellinger is a cut around for a lot of folks, and when they pop out on Silverado Trail, it creates that first little backup when you're trying to come down South County on down Valley on Silverado Trail. So it's acceleration lane or some little improvements there. The little things I think we've been terrible at. In large part because we haven't had the money. We're always looking for the big money for the big stuff, like the Sosco flyover, but we got to get the little money for the little stuff and just start whittling away at this problem, and we haven't been good at that, so we got to improve.
Yeah. Little projects and a lot of little places to pick up the traffic flow and so forth. A lot of focus on transportation issues, and I think it's going to be interesting to see as this first multi-roundabout project gets done in the city of Napa. There was a story in the Register not too long ago about the roundabout revolution. Like now people are looking at the Sosco flyover area, looking at 2912. Do you think there might be movement towards some really more buildable projects in those areas with much lower cost than a big flyover elevated structure, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can get a roundabout in for a couple million and an interchange, kind of a grade separated structure is 20, 30, 40 million.
Right.
They're easy to do, and I think that we've chosen a complicated one. There's three in a row,
right.
So it's like once we get good at this, we can handle any roundabout anywhere, right? But no, they're straightforward. I picture there's these pinch points up Valley I mentioned earlier, the little things, but like Madison at Yountville, that first light is what starts that big backup heading south on 29, and then I can picture a set of them at Trancas and Silverado. Where it doglegs through the city of Napa, that's the other pinch point. That's where traffic sort of starts. So why not get rid of those signals and put it in a roundabout there? Yeah. We can do it.
There was one proposed at Rutherford Cross, I believe, in 29.
Yeah, that's super challenging because of train tracks. Maybe they can move slightly, but with the angles required on train tracks, it's very difficult. So let's say set that side, and then you're actually buying and taking out a large part of Rutherford Grill.
Yeah. Can't have that.
I know. You go there a lot, Barry, and I would never let that happen. So
I don't go there often, but I should, and I wish I did.
So that site's challenging. I agree we need something there, but roundabout really was a problem there. But some of these other areas I mentioned, they're not. They're space.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's been a good conversation. I'm glad you could come in. We learned about SB 20, and there's been quite a bit of information going around about that with some misperceptions of what's intended. That's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I offer folks to call 337-4962. Call me. I'll walk you through it. Really, there's so much bad misinformation, conspiracy theories. Just get over it. Call me. I'll walk you through it. We're on the same page.
All right. County Supervisor Ryan Gregory, thanks for being here today.